Okay, so Vayera, 6 degrees of Elisha Labati Menadav. You guys know that game? 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon? Where you try to connect any movie to Kevin Bacon, because he doesn't so many during his day, I guess. So the reason why I bring that up with Elisheva, Bat Aminadav, is because of her yichus. She's one of the most connected people in all of Chumash, and all of Tanakh, really, to all the different families. And she only shows up explicitly in this parasha. The only place where her name shows up in the entire Chumash is right here. And it's in a lineage that's being given from Moshe and Aaron, which itself, by the way, is an anomaly, this whole lineage over here. I'm sure most of you remember that when Moshe is introduced in Parashat Shmot, his parents are anonymous. We have no idea who they are. Bat Levi, Ve'ish Levi, we don't find out. Only in Parashat Vayera, an entire Parashat later, we find out that his parents are Amram and Yocheved. And we also find out about many of the other people in his family. It starts with Reuven, Shimon, and then when it hits Levi, we get, we get Amram and his brothers. We find out about Moshe. We find out about Korach even, so the nephews. And then we find out about Aharon. And Aharon gets the most attention, actually. If you were to guess, you would think that Moshe would get the most attention in this section, right? But it's actually Aharon who gets the most attention. Why do I say Aharon gets the most attention? Because we don't only find out about Aharon himself and his parents. We also find out about his wife. And we don't even only find out about his wife, we find out about his kids. And we don't even find out only about his kids, we find out about his grandson as well. Who am I talking about?
Pinchas.
Pinchas, we find out about Pinchas. It goes all the way from Aaron to Eliezer to Pinchas. And so he's actually the star of the show over here. When people read that section, you know, our natural reaction is to think, okay, now we're going to find out about Moshe. But we don't really find out about Moshe. We don't even find out about much about Moshe. We only find out about mostly Aharon. This is actually, according to many, this is the story of the Kehuna. That's what this is. That's why Korach gets in there, because Korach plays a part in that whole story. But be that as it may, we do find out about Aharon's wife, whose name is Elisheva. Vayikach Aharon et Elisheva bat Aminadav, achot Nachshon lo leisha, vatildo et Nadav et Aviu et Elazar et Itamar. And the next pasuk we find out about Pinchas and Pinchas' father and mother. But over here we find out about Elisheva bat Aminadav, and we find out a little bit too much, right? We find out her name, we find out her father's name, and then strangely also find out about her brother's name, Nachshon. Now, why do we need to find out about Nachshon? That is very uncommon, to find out about somebody's brother. Why do you think it's important to know about Nachshon?
Because he led the people into the Reed Sea when it split.
That's right. The Midrash says that Nachshon is the one who jumped in first into the Yam Suf. But that's even only in a Midrash. The truth is, the only thing we know about Nachshon, that's true, but the only thing we actually know about Nachshon from the text is that he is the Nasi of a very important Shevet, right? Which one is he the Nasi of?
Yehuda.
Of Yehuda, right? Nachshon ben Aminadav is the Nasi of Yehuda, right? Chokek ben Raglav, they're the leadership, right? Nachshon is the head of, perhaps, I guess, outside of Levi, the most important Shevet, presumably, of Bnei Israel. That's Nachshon. And so Elisheva is definitely impressive by virtue of being her brother's sister. But when you look, what we're going to look at tonight, what we're looking at tonight is basically three teachings about Elisheva, okay? And some of them more familiar than others. And I want to see what we can tease out about what the Torah is trying to tell us about Elisheva herself. So the first thing that we're going to learn about is what Rashi says on this pasuk. The Psikta Zutrasa, and there's many Midrashim that say similar things. It says, why do we find out about Nachshon over here? Nit arva mishpachat hakeuna im mishpachat hamalchut. Shevet Levi v'shevet Yehuda. That's exactly what it's telling. He's telling you that the Shevet of Malchut, which is the Shevet of Nachshon ben Aminadav, Yehuda, became combined with the Shevet of Kehuna, of Aharon, of Levi. She is the nexus between the two. So they've been fused. It's interesting. Do we ever find in Jewish history that they really did become fused?
Maccabim.
Right, that's right. The Hashmonaim. It's a machlokas rishonim about whether or not this is a positive thing or a negative thing. Ramban actually is very anti the Hashmonaim because they took the kingship. They were Levim, they were Kohanim, and they took the kingship, which he says they shouldn't have done. The Rambam, on the other hand, doesn't seem to have a problem with it. The Rambam just mentions that they had the kingship for 200 years after they retook the Beit HaMikdash and doesn't have anything negative to say about them. So it's kind of up in the air whether or not this is a positive or a negative development. But the root of it seems to come over here when Elisheva marries Aharon. But Rashi perhaps makes the more famous comment over here. He says the rabbis learned something important from here. Mikan lamadnu hanosei isha tarich livdok be'acheha. When a man gets married to a woman, the first thing he should look at is
her brothers.
Now, what does this mean? What do you take this to mean?
Why was learned this to mean that?
Didn't we see something similar with Lavan?
What about Lavan?
Should look at your wife's brothers, who would be Lavan before you get married.
Right.
Am I making this up?
No, I think I know what you're talking about. I vaguely remember that, but I guess that wouldn't have worked over there, right? Lavan wasn't such a... Actually, I don't know. Maybe at the beginning, Lavan was okay. I think I remember what you're talking about, but I don't remember specifically. Was there somebody else?
The kids. You might expect the kids to turn out similar to the brothers.
Right. They say in one specific aspect, right? With the hair. They say if you want to know if you're going to be bald, you should look at your uncle. I don't know. Are there any doctors that can confirm this or not?
Yeah.
Are there any nephews that can confirm this or not? Okay. So is that what the Gemara is talking? Is that what the Midrash and the Gemara is talking about, Yechezkel? You think it's talking about, you know, you want to find out what your kids are going to turn out like?
Contextually, not so much.
Well, I mean... It could be talking about how any nephews are going to talk about, obviously, more than just being bald, but about their qualities. It could be.
Yeah, but I don't see anything here that talks about that. So, you know, I don't really see anything in the context directly.
Well, so then what does it mean? What good is it to look at the brothers?
I had a Rebbe explained once that that it means that usually women can hide their negative qualities and their inner selves better than men. So if you're marrying someone who's got bad character traits, chas v'chalila, they might be hidden at first. But if the bad character traits are genetic, literally traits, right, then you'll see them in her brother straight away.
That's very interesting. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Good. I'm glad that we're getting into the sexist comments now, so that it won't be so bad when I do it later. Okay. So
my Rebbe was from Brooklyn.
Maybe I know him. Maybe he was my Rebbe too.
It was a Rosh Hashiva, Rabbi Tanza. I love a
shalom.
He was a Rosh Hashiva in Johannesburg. Rabbi?
Rabbi Herbie Tanzer?
Abraham Tanzer.
Abraham Tanzer.
No, he's the one that just passed away that they had the tribute to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so we continue a little bit more, and some of the Rishonim have a few more comments to make about this. Ibn Ezra, I'll combine with Ramban. Ibn Ezra says that the reason why it's mentioned is to tell you not about Aaron, but actually Kavod Elazar, right? Hiskir Eshet Aaron Bavur Kvod Elazar, Vehiskir Achod Nachshon Bavur Sod HaKeuna. We mention the mother to tell you that, oh, you know, this Elazar, you know, he's very important, that he was important. It's Eliezer, no? In a way, it's written, Elazar, sorry. Elazar, it's his mother is mentioned to tell you how great she was, but not really specifically for Aharon. And it mentions Korach because at the time they were perceived as being tzaddikim. His children, at least, were tzaddikim. We know that Bnei Korach lometu, and they in fact wrote some of the Tehillim. So this whole story is actually to tell you about the kihuna. It's to impress upon you, like I was saying before, to impress upon you the kavod of the kihuna. The Ramban makes an interesting comment over here. He points out why is Elisheva mentioned. It says, Kasher hiskir aim hanevi'im lichvodam, What's the Ramban talking about over here when he's talking about the Eim HaNeviim? Who is Eim HaNeviim?
Yocheved.
Yafet, Yocheved. That's right. Yocheved, because she's mentioned in this story as well, as I said. You know, it could have just been Amram, Kahat, Ari, Gershon, Kat, Ari, etc., etc., and get to Moshe, and Aaron, and Elazar, and Itamar. We could have just heard about the men. Nobody would have batted an eyelash. But you have Yocheved and Elishava both being mentioned. To tell you, because there was something important about her, that there was a miracle. Yocheved lived extra long, and she had Moshe Rabbeinu relatively, I guess you'd say, late in life, at the age of, I don't know, 100, 200, I don't remember exactly. So too, the same reason we want to mention that the mother of Kehuna, which is Elisheva, that she also has yichus to the Melucha. She was the achot of the Nasi HaGadol. It goes on, there's another woman mentioned over here, Putiel is mentioned as being the mother of Pinchas. Why? Because Pinchas is going to go on to become, as well, the father of all of Kehuna Gdola. So every time, the Ramban is saying over here, Al derech ha-pshat ne'amar ha-shaktuvim ha-skirim ba-melachim shemot imotam. Anytime somebody significantly important is mentioned, so you should expect to see their mother's name mentioned as well, which is an interesting theory. He points out a few other places, Ma'acha bat Avishalom, Azuva bat Shalchi, different places where a mother is mentioned because a significant person is being described. That thus far, the kind of positive viewpoint. The negative viewpoint over here, not about Aaron, but actually about Moshe, the Abrabanel mentions, not over here, but much later on by Yifat Toar. It's interesting that he goes out of his way, really, to mention this. By the mitzvah of Eshet Yifat Toar, which is the mitzvah where if a man goes to war and sees a beautiful woman on the other side of the battlefield, he has the right to take her home. But the Torah seems to signal that this is not a good idea by following that mitzvah with the Isha Ahuvanu, Isha Snua, and then eventually with the Ben Sorer or Moreh, indicating that starting a relationship like that is not going to end well. And the Abarbanel, you know, like I said, comes out of nowhere and says, Kemosh Nirmaz, Beomro, Vaikach, Aronat, Elisheva, Bati Menadav, Achot Nachshon, Lo Leisha, obviously signaling that Elisheva was a positive role model. Shelachay Nivchur Bnei Aron Lekuna, Velo bnei Moshe lemalchut mitzad griut mishpachat ishto. Okay, not politically correct, but that's what the Abarbanel has to say. He basically says, you know how Moshe's children don't really come through, like they don't come shining through in the Chumash or in Tanakh at all. But Aaron's children forever are you know the examples. Their kehuna comes from Aaron; it doesn't come from Moshe. So the reason for that is because of the women that they married. Aaron married Elisheva bat Aminadav, Moshe married Tzipora bat Yitro. What's the fly in the ointment over here in the Abarbanel's theory? Martin, I wonder if you can guess what it is. What was that?
Ephraim and Menashe.
What about Ephraim and Menashe? Osnat?
Yeah, it wasn't married a woman that was not...
Well, unless Osnat is, as the rabbi said, was the daughter of Dinah, and that can save it. But I think there's a bigger monkey wrench we could throw in over here.
Yitro was Kohen Midian.
Tzipora was the one who did the Mila of the boys.
Okay, yeah, Tzipora was a very nice woman. That's fine. Tzipora was a very nice woman, but Abarbanel is apparently not impressed. He's not impressed.
Also, Moshe didn't have any choice. He was stuck in Midian. He couldn't...
No, nobody's blaming him. No, I think there's a technical problem. I mentioned it before.
Rav Dani, is it because at least half of the shiftekah came from the nursemaids and not from Rachel and Leah?
Okay, that's true. That's true. But I'm talking about something even more specific. I hinted at it before. I said there were three mentioned. There were three women mentioned in this parasha, right? In this whole section over here. There's Yocheved. There's Elisheva. And there was a third one as well. Here, let me bring it up on Safari. It's not over here. That's why. That's why you're not getting it. No, not Miriam. I mean, I don't think so. I said Aaron's children are mentioned, right? Elazar and Ithamar, mm-hmm. along with his grandchildren. Who's his grandchild that's mentioned?
Pinchas.
And who's Pinchas's mother?
Putiel.
And who's Putiel? See if we can find it. I don't know if Rashi mentions it over here or if he mentions it in Parshat Pinchas. Here. Ibnot Putiel, it says, right? He took from Putiel. Sorry, Putiel is not the mother. Putiel is the father of the mother.
It could be Yitro.
Yafet. Putiel
is another name for Yitro.
It is Yitro. That's what Rashi says. Yizera Yitro.
Others say it's Yosef.
Or it might be both. Yeah, but let's say it's Mizera Yitro. So then the Abarbanel's theory falls apart, right? Because Yitro's daughter got in either way. Either it's Tzipporah, who's married to Moshe, or it's whoever was married to Pinchas. I don't think we know her name, I guess. Just Mibnot Putiel, right? So, sorry, Elazar, married Elazar. Pinchas' mother married Elazar. So there's a little problem with that theory if you go with the Yitro, daughters of Yitro problem. Okay. So that's the first and most famous teaching about Elisheva Bat Aminadav. A little bit less famous. Yeah, go ahead.
Danny, why none of the Rishonim suggesting that they mentioned Elisheva because of Nadav and Avihu, what happened with them? It would be classic to say that, because of her.
Interesting. In what way do you think it could be because of her?
No, I mean, it's to hint that something bad is going to happen to her first two boys.
Okay, so we'll return to that later, and you'll see you let me know if you're satisfied. Okay? We'll return to that point that you're making. But first, we got to go through this. So a less famous point about them, and it's less famous because it's totally overshadowed by another person, right? It was from last week's parasha. Vayomer melech Mitzrayim la-mialdot ha-evriyot. Who are these mialdot ha-evriyot? So the Gemara in Sota actually says it's a machloket. Nobody knows it's a machloket because everybody knows who Shifra and Pu'ah were, who were the Mialdot were. But the truth is it's a machloket. Rabu Shmuel, Chadamar Isha Ubita, Chadamar Kala V'chamotah. One says it was a woman and her daughter, and the other says it was a woman and her daughter-in-law. Now you know where this is going. Mandamar, it's definitely Yocheved. Mandamar Isha Ubita Yocheved Umiriam. Mandamar Kala V'chamotah Yocheved Ve'elisheva. So it could have been either Miriam and Yocheved, or it could have been Elisheva and Yocheved. And the truth is that from a logical perspective, it makes a lot more sense to say that it's Yocheved and Elisheva. Why do I say that?
Miriam was a child.
Miriam couldn't have been more than 5 years old, right? Mm. She couldn't have been more than 5 years old. How helpful is she going to be? Now, we don't know how old Elisheva was, but at least it's possible for Elisheva to be older. We know Miriam is 5 years older than Moshe Rabbeinu, so she can't be more than five at this point. But Elisheva, we have no idea how old she is. She could be older. So that's an interesting theory over here, and it would kind of explain, maybe why Elisheva got to marry Aaron, maybe Yocheved got to know her, she was in the family, she was around. It would kind of make sense. Okay, but now we get to the major part over here, the story of joy and tragedy. So there's a lot of versions of this teaching. We'll start with the quote-unquote official version. This is the one from the Gemara in Zvachim. The Gemara in Zvachim says, and David, this connects a little bit to what you were saying before, Elisheva, the daughter of Aminadab and the wife of Aaron, had five more reasons for joy than other daughters of Israel on the day the tabernacle was dedicated, right? On the day of the Mishkan was inaugurated, there were five reasons for her to be happy. Number one, her brother-in-law, Moshe, was a king. Okay. Her husband, Aaron, was going to be Kohen Gadol. Her son, Elazar, was going to be the Sekan Kohen Gadol. Now, here's interesting. Her son's son, Pinchas, was going to be the Kohen Mashuach Milchama. Right? Now, that's interesting. We'll get back to that later. And then it says, and her brother, Nachshon ben Aminadav, who was the prince of Yehuda was the one to bring the first offering, right? When they inaugurated the Mishkan, on the first day that they inaugurated it, the first korban that was brought was from Shevet Yehuda. We have 12 days of bringing korbanot from the first day of Nisan until the 12th day. That's essentially the reason, by the way, that we don't do tachanun all of Nisan. Many people don't know that. That's essentially the reason, because the first 12 days were made up of the inaugurating of the Mishkan. That's the days the Nisim brought their korbanot. This is what we read every Chanukah. And Nachshon Ben Amidah was that first day. So on that first day, she's got five people that she's proud of. She's a proud mother, wife, grandmother, sister-in-law, everything. And then what happens? On that same day of joy, she was in mourning for her two sons, Nadav and Avihu, who died on that day, right? Elazar is the Skan Kohen Gadol. Why? Because Nadav and Avihu, they died on that day, right? Which is not a happy thing. So what do you make of this teaching? What's the purpose of it? Or maybe, do you have any questions about this teaching? Any problems?
I just learned it as an easy way to remember all the things that happened on that day. You look at it from her point of view, and you remember the five weddings and a funeral, and you remember to pull all the things together of what was a very busy day in Jewish history. That's how I looked at it.
Was Pinchas actually appointed on that day? Didn't it happen much later when you went to war?
Right, so that was what I was wondering about. Right, this Pinchas business.
You had the inauguration of the Mishkan. You had at least the Nesim were appointed and brought the Korbanot, and Moshe was crowned king, and there were four or five things that happened specifically on that day, and as well as the funerals.
Well, it says over here, you have Pinchas. What Mike is bringing up is that it says Pinchas was the priest anointed for war. He's the Kohen Mashuach Milchama. The problem is, Pinchas is not even a Kohen yet. That only happens in Parashat Pinchas, after he kills Zimri, which is 40 years later. And even if it's not 40 years later, some say it's not 40 years later, it's definitely much later. Like, what's going on over here? So the Rashbam actually points out, he says, well, Arevi Shmini Lemiluim Haya Pinchas Meshoch Melchama Shekin Mone Simchazu B'Shavas Machot. It's interesting, the Rashbam says that there was Shavas Machot. The Gemara says only five. Shaitali Shava Isha Eshat Aroni Teira Lachirot Shaiben Benam Mashuach Melchama. Vishama Misham Natan Lo Liot Mashuach Melchama Aval Avoda Ludorot Lo. Vekan Idna Lo Kehuna Lechol Mili Lezaro Acharav Brit Kehunat Olam. See, the Rashbam asked this question in Parshas Pinchas. He says, why are we saying that Pinchas is only now a Kohen when the Gemara seems to say that Elisheva was proud of Pinchas for being a Kohen on the day of the inauguration of the Mishkan? And the Rashbam answers, and he says, well, there's Kohanim and then there's Kohanim. There's a Kohen who's the Kohen Mishach Melchama, the one who's anointed as being the warrior priest, essentially. And then there's the Kohen who gets to do the Avodah and the Beit HaMikdash. And that part of the Kohuna Pinchas did not have until the event with Zimri. And his children were not going to be Kohanim for the rest of the generations until what he did with Zimri. So he was only a half Kohen at that time, but he was a half Kohen. Okay? That's what the Rashbam says. Hmm. Now, I wanted to show you a little bit of a cross-section over here, because this teaching is in like almost any book of Midrash that you pick up, you can find this. It's quite amazing. But in different versions, in different ways. So for example, this is Vayikra Rabba, a classic version. Elisheva bat Aminadav lo samcha ba'olam. She was never happy. Why? She'ra'ata chamisha ktarim biyom echad yivama melech. You don't often see that word used for a brother-in-law when the brother-in-law is still alive, right? Yivama melech, achia anasi, ba'ala kohen gadol, shnei banes shnei skani kehuna, Pinchas ben bena mashuach milchama, right? Kevan shnechnesu banei lakriv nesurfu, ne'apcha simchata la'evel. Adau dichti v'acharei mot shnei bnei Aharon. Okay, so over here, is there any difference between this and what we saw in the Gemara?
Mm-hmm. It's like the exact opposite. Why? Here they're focusing on sadness because he's saying she never was happy.
Right.
That's what it says.
There's definitely
why not? Because even all those things happened, that was the day her two sons did something terrible and were killed.
Right.
And that frustrated the simcha.
Right. And I think I think what the Midrash is doing over here, anybody know, what do you think the Midrash is doing over here when it says, Hadau dechti b'acharei mot shnei bnei Aharon? Well, I mean, yeah, it says in the Torah, acharei mot shnei bnei Aharon. Why does that mean
all the rest of it? What about her? Their sons.
She's never
her
mentioned. Sons of, she's right. never mentioned. I think what the Midrash is doing is it's saying that of all the things that happened on that day, the only way the Torah have is describing it is acharim b'et shnei b'nei Aaron. I think that's what the Midrash is saying. It's almost tapping into Elisheva's pain.
Yeah.
I think it's explaining what, because it says acharim b'et shnei b'nei Aaron, but then it's like after this, it doesn't say what. So the Midrash is saying after this she was not happy, and all the good things were sort of blotted out by the pain that she felt, and that's what happened after the sons died. Otherwise, right. It's left hanging. After the sons died, what?
Right. But I just think it's fascinating. It says lo samcha ba'olam. She wasn't happy, but she was happy. She was happy for a few moments, right?
Yeah, but you can't compare pride in all your other relatives with chas v'chalila, the death of two sons. I mean, they don't balance out the emotion of happiness for the one thing and terrible heartache for the other.
Right. Well, I wanted to actually talk about that. I wanted to, you know, is that true? Can we say that, you know, no matter how much simcha you have, if something bad happens, it undermines all of it? There's an interesting element psychologically. Is that true? I think I had another source over here. I think it's the Sora More. Let me see if I can find it quickly. Here we go.
It depends on what that something is.
Right. Well, imagine somebody wins the lottery and then they stub their toe 2 minutes later. Is it all over? They're like, forget it.
No, the toe's all over. The lottery's still there.
Yeah. But they're in a bad mood now.
But it seems to me the way this Midrash is written that it's all happened on that day. So, I mean, she was happy and proud and schlepping nachas, and then this terrible, terrible thing happened. Right. So it took away all that joy and pride.
Right.
I can understand that, chas v'chalila.
Right. So the Tzor Amor taps into this as well. He says, v'kol ze lehoed lanu ki acharit simcha tuga. Kamram zal bo bayom nimtzeta lishova bat menadav yeter al benot. She had all these things that everybody else didn't happen. And I just love the way he says this. Ve'evel echad. She has all this, and then one evel. Shenisefu shnei baneya v'kirvatam lifnei Hashem l'horod. Kama gadol haya lo koach ke'ev ha'evel. Mita'anug asmachot. There shouldn't be a period here. I don't know why they put a period here. To tell you how much greater the pain was than the happiness. You know, if this is true, it's a very scary thing. It's a very scary thing. A person can have 20 reasons to be happy and one reason to be sad, and that one blackness, one dark hole will swallow everything.
But
we're not mentioning the fact that in a way she wasn't even able to be an avelus for her sons. After all, what does Hashem say to Aaron? That he can't say anything.
That
he has to continue. That they have to go on as if nothing happened. And that's the hard part.
That may be true for Aaron, but it's not true for Elisheva. Elisheva can do anything. Vayidom Aaron, because he needs to continue his avoda. But Elisheva, there's no strictures on her wailing. The Torah doesn't say anything about it. We don't know what she reacts.
But Rav Dani, it's a matter of timing. I'm sure after months, after weeks, after years, one has to deal with the sadness. But at that moment, when there's all this pride and suddenly this heartache, I think the heartache will overwhelm.
Yeah. Which is just, it's unfortunate psychologically. So so much happiness can be blotted out.
There's something else I don't understand about the language, and that is the la'olam, right? So we're focusing on that day and what balanced out on that day, but why la'olam? She was never happy la'olam. What about before that day? What about the day?
No, so I think it doesn't say la'olam, it says ba'olam. I also thought it said la'olam at the beginning, which bothered me more, but it says, l'samcha ba'olam, I think it means she never had her chance. Like she never got a real chance. She had that, there was her day, and she lost it. She never really had her chance to have a full simcha. I think that's what that means.
I don't think that it's related to timing, Rav Dani. It says she wasn't happy in this world. I mean, that means that she was never happy before. She was not happy in this
much
world.
Much broader.
Yeah, yeah. It's not so specific in time.
Maybe. So here's another version. This is from Koheles Rabbah. It says, L'schok amarti mehulal, which is a pasuk from Kohelet, right? Shlomo HaMelech, he says, for happiness, I said, it's a waste, right? Mehulal. Ma merubava schok shesachakta v'midat adin ala lisheva bat aminadav. This almost takes it like this very cynical view, which is unsurprising from Koheles, that, you know, even your happiest moments, they're not really going to end up being happy. Up until here, it's all the same stuff. What's the point? This is a very cynical approach. What's the point of being happy? Ultimately, it's all going to get screwed up anyways. What, there's a wedding? It's gonna end in tragedy. There's somebody is born, well, they're gonna die. You know, this is kind of the attitude that the Midrash is taking over here to what happened with Elisheva. Mm. Also a little bit disturbing.
Mm.
That a person shouldn't be happy.
Mm.
The Rabbeinu B'chaya tamps it down a little, but he just says, no, I'm just giving you advice. Not just because you're happy today doesn't mean you're going to be happy tomorrow. Elisheva bat Aminadav is a cautionary tale. It's just warning you. Don't get too crazy. Don't get too happy. Don't be so proud. Don't be too joyful, because, you know, the more joy you feel, the more painful it's going to be when it ends.
That's terrible. That's terrible.
That's worse.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Well,
my dad,
he's basically saying the higher you rise, the longer the fall.
At least to be aware of it, I think at least to be aware of it is good, right?
I have another idea here. Going back to Ba'olam. What's Simcha Ba'olam? Ba'olam is Ba'olam Hazeh, right? So we learn all the reasons why they did what happened and everything like that. Right. So Shima had a lot of joy Ba'olam Haba when she saw the true reality of what had happened. But it's focusing on Ba'olam Hazeh, where her joy was wiped out. Mm-hmm. And that's the lesson. The lesson is Ba'olam Hazeh, things can happen from second to second. You need to be aware. Just be aware of what's going on. You're happy now, you can be sad in a minute's time, and it can reverse itself.
Asur l'malei pi b'schok Ba'olam Hazeh, the Gemara in Brachos says. Good, Rabbi. We're going to return to that later when we see the Shlach. That's good. But here, I wanted to show you two interesting midrashim that only take the first half. Look at this. Midrash Mishlei, Oz v'adar levusha v'tischak liyom acharon. Okay, Zu Elisheva bat Aminadav, Shirata arba smachot b'yom echad. Only arba. Achi anesi ba'ala kohen gadol, achi ba'ala melech, u'shnei banei apirchei kuna. It ignores Pinchas, and it ignores what happens to Nadav and Avihu. There's no hemshech in that midrash. There's nothing else. That's it. That's where it ends. Which is just interesting. It ignores what actually happens to Elisheva. Just focuses on the happiness, which means that there was a focus on, at some point, that, you know, Elisheva really was at some point at the beginning of the day happy, and everybody was looking at her and saying, "Wow, that she's so lucky, that woman."
It also doesn't mention in the verse Machot the fact that Moshe, her brother-in-law, was a Melech. I guess they figure he's not a blood relative, perhaps.
Achi Ba'al HaMelech. No, it's right here. Achi Ba'al HaMelech. That's Moshe.
But in Vayikra Rabba, it also said that, I think, Arbas Machot.
No, Vayikra Rabba, it said five. Chamisha Ktarim. B'yom Echad. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Here's another medrash that doesn't mention it explicitly, although you tell me what you think from the ending. This is actually from Rut. It says, V'hi Beit Chaka Beit Peretz. That's the end of Rut. Okay? Now, Beit Peretz, meaning from the family of Yehuda, right? Nachshon is from that family, and so is Elisheva. Elisheva is from Beit Peretz. But then the Midrash ends and says, right? This is the Midrash that says, that Boaz didn't survive the first night of marriage. They were together that night. She became pregnant. Boaz did not even survive to meet their son, who would eventually become the great grandfather of David HaMelech. So I think over here also you have this kind of mingling between happiness and tragedy, and how they're inextricable from each other. No, we don't have so much time, so I don't want to go into it too deeply. But here's a poem that was written by Rabbi David Ben Chassin, which basically tells the story from Elisheva Bat Aminadav's perspective about her pain that she felt when she saw what happened to David Aviu. I don't want to go too deeply into it because I wanted to show you the shlach. Okay, so you have to hold on to your seatbelts. Well, if you're seatbelted, you don't have to hold on to them. Just hold on to your seats as we go through this shlach. Okay, so he's going to give us 2 points. We'll read through the whole thing. So he starts in an interesting place. Okay, he says, and Martin, you protected me from this before. I don't want to protect myself from anything that's about to be said. From a politically correct perspective, I shouldn't be reading this shlach. Okay? But this is part of our tradition. It happens to be especially part of my tradition and my mother's tradition, a Horowitz. So we're going to read the shlach and take it for what it is, okay? Everybody give me a thumbs up that they're ready for this. Okay, good.
No.
All right, well, you can see from the first sentence, Eve was the reason that death came into our world, as we know. Okay, simple enough. Chava brought the death into the world because until she ate from the tree, we were going to live forever. From a simple factual perspective, that works. Fine. It says, I said to wanton men, do not be wanton. Amarti laholalim al taholu asamech lo kol asamech hayom chule. Okay, I think the psukim got messed up over here. But basically, this is one of the psukim that introduced one of the midrashim about Elisheva. So he's quoting one of the midrashim. So after saying that Chava was the reason that death came into the world, he quotes the midrash about Elisheva. And it's exactly the midrash that we wrote from Midrash Rabbah. She didn't rejoice in spite of 5 joyous events on the same day, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then it says, this is why David warns us in the psalm not to indulge in excessive joys. It is not given to the righteous to experience so much joy in this life. Rabbi, that's what you were talking about, right? Okay. The Midrash mentions that God does not rejoice anymore in this world since he had to withdraw his Shekhinah due to Eve's sin. So here he's connecting it back to that first point that he was making, that it was because of Eve, because of Chava, that Hashem cannot fully rejoice in our world. His presence can't be fully felt. But he will only rejoice in the world to come, as we know from Yismach Hashem b'Masav, that Hashem will once again rejoice in his accomplishments. It says, Yismach Hashem b'masav. It doesn't say, Samach Hashem or Sameach Hashem. It says, Yismach, which is in the future. One day, he will rejoice in his accomplishments. Right? In this world, only the wicked experience true joy. Fine. So the Shlach says that there are several difficulties in the Midrash. Why does the author speak about Elisheva's having seen 5 joyous events on that day instead of the same joyous events seen by her husband Aaron, right? We saw this in the Midrash before. In Midrash Rabbah, it says, Ra'ata. She saw 5 joyous events, but Aaron saw them also. Did not her husband experience even greater joy on that day when he personally was elevated in the position of high priest? Why are we only focusing on Elisheva's joy? He saw his brother crowned as king, his sons installed as deserving children, as mentioned in the Torah by the words of Mishpachotam, Lebeit Avotam, meaning that his sons are compared to him even more to their mother, okay? His sons became his deputies, which demonstrated how closely they resembled their father in character traits. Essentially, the Shlach is asking, why in the world does the Midrash focus on Elisheva? And I want to compound the question even worse. Elisheva doesn't show up in the Pesukim, but Aharon does. It says, Vayidom Aharon. If anybody should be focused on in the Midrash as having lost on a day of joy, it should be Aharon himself. Why Elisheva? Everybody hear the question?
Yeah.
So he's going to give 2 answers. First, he says, some people want to answer our question by referring to the Talmud and Avodah Zarah, which regards the wife of a chaver as being equal to her husband. This means that she experienced that her sons regarded themselves as related to their mother as intimately as to their father. In other words, the point of the Midrash is to say that Elisheva was the same as Aharon. They were the same. This is in line with the advice of our sages who counsel a person to examine the brothers of a prospective bride to see what character traits he may expect to find in his bride. When the Torah reports the marriage of Aharon to Elisheva, It stresses that Elisheva was Nachshon's sister. This proves that he was influenced by the character traits or qualities of Nachshon. In other words, that Aaron was attracted to Elisheva because he saw in her the traits of Nachshon, which apparently accorded with his own values. Meaning to say that Elisheva and Aaron were one. And so that's the point of the Midrash, to say that she experienced both the joys and the tragedies of that day in the same way that Aaron did. That's what someone wants to say. But the Shlod doesn't like it. He regards this answer as somewhat forced. Okay, so let's see what the Shlod has to say. Okay, here we go. He says, we should remember that Aaron represented the mystical dimension of Adam. I have to be honest, I don't know what he's talking about. Apparently in Kabbalah, there's an idea that Aaron and Adam are somehow connected. I own a version of the Shlod with footnotes on the bottom. There's no footnote here. So I can't say, go look in the Zohar in such and such a place, that Aaron specifically is connected to Adam. If anybody is aware, you can let me know. Marilyn, you know about this? You know about Adam and Aaron?
No. No. Okay.
Fine. Then nobody does. So if this was so, then it's reasonable to regard his wife Elisheva as equivalent to the mystical dimension of Adam's wife Eve. If Aaron is Adam, then Elisheva is Chava. Okay. Simple math. Chava sinned primarily by allowing her eyes to seduce her. Okay, where's he going with this though? The Torah emphasizes that she saw that the tree was good as food, pleasant to behold. You guys see that word?
Yeah.
Okay. This is simply a description of the urge to become honored. Okay? So according to the Shlah, what Chava saw when she saw the fruit was she saw honor. Does anybody want to try to fill that in? Like, in what way? It would seem to me what she saw was a good-tasting fruit, whether it was a grape or a tamar or an etrog or chita, whatever it was. It seems to me like clearly it was delicious, and that's why she wanted to eat it. In what way can we see that she was after honor? I think there is a way. I think it might even be pshat in the psukim. Not about pshat, but at least one possible pshat.
Well, it was the tree of knowledge. She wanted to be honored through the knowledge.
Okay, she wanted to be honored through the knowledge. What did she expect to happen when she ate from the tree?
Would she become the equivalent of Adam, maybe?
Even more. What's better than being Adam?
She'd be above Adam. She'd be more like Hashem.
More like Hashem. She'd be like Hashem. Now, why in the world would she think that she'd be like Hashem? That's what the Nachash told her. The Nachash said, the reason Hashem doesn't want you to eat from the tree is because he doesn't want you to be like him. Right? That's manifestly what she thought was going to happen when she ate from the tree. Now, it could be that it looked delicious. That could be. But I think the Shlah is onto something when he says that what she was after was honor. She was after going above her station, right? From being human to being a god. So he says, this is a description of the urge to become honored. This urge brings about the klipa that women behave arrogantly. Okay. In explaining this verse in Psalms, the Midrash describes Elisheva's joys as the root of her experiencing some haughtiness. So like it or not, this is what he connects Elisheva to Chava. He says, just like Chava was after honor and what she saw was her opportunity to be honored, the Midrash, when it says she saw five wonderful things, what it's saying is that she was after the honor of those five things, right? Elisheva is after the honor of saying, oh, my son, my husband, my brother-in-law, my father, my brother, right? All of that. When the Midrash emphasizes that she saw her husband elevated, it wishes to draw our attention to the fact that in contrast to his wife, Aaron did not see. That's why the Midrash doesn't say this about Aaron, because Aaron wasn't like that. Aaron did not become haughty on account of the honors and joys he experienced on that day. Aaron acted as if he had not seen these honors, which could have caused him to become haughty. When Nadav and Abihu died, Elisheva suffered a similar disappointment to the one Eve experienced when death was decreed on mankind, on her sons and descendants. The Midrash begins with the word teda, meaning that if you want to understand the whole occurrence, you would do well to study the chapter of Eve's seduction in Gan Eden, which is about that. Okay? What do you guys think of that?
I think it's very rough. I think it's very rough. It takes no way into account that maybe Elisheva was happy on their behalf.
Right.
Happy for them as being, you know, sure.
Yeah, I mean, what's so wrong with being proud, of being happy that, you feel, you know, blessed that everybody in your family is experiencing such success? What's wrong with that? But it seems like what Ashla is saying is that she went beyond that. She was using it as a marker for her own honor. I assume, meaning I don't think the Shla is suggesting that Aaron wasn't happy for himself and for all those around him. He just didn't see it as a reflection of him. And the Midrash is accusing, according to the Shla, Elishava of feeling that this was somehow a reflection of her.
I think it's rough, but it makes it sense. Because the Midrash wants to teach us something that we wouldn't ordinarily know. But yeah. my first thought of why doesn't it say something about Aaron is because we knew Aaron was happy. But also we would know that Elisheva would be happy because we know who she's related to. We can draw the same conclusions. Why does the Midrash have to tell us that she saw all these things? Right. So that's maybe what the Midrash is coming to teach us. It's not coming to teach us that she was related to all these people because we know that.
Right. I think the Shlah is a very extremely careful read of the Midrash. I mean, he focused on this word Ra'ata, which you would overlook normally.
I think maybe if it's the reverse. Maybe the Midrash is saying Elisheva had all of these very good reasons to have been happy on that day, but none of it could overcome the loss of her sons.
Yeah, look, that's the simple reason, Midrash, for sure. Absolutely, no one's discounting that. The other point is the Shlaj is going one level deeper.
The other point is that Aaron and her son and the sons and everybody else were very busy doing whatever it is they were doing, mm-hmm. and she was watching. And she's getting the pride in watching her family do all these wonderful things that she cannot do.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay.
I don't know. I just don't like, Robbie knows, I have quite a lot of issue with taking something like this and seeing the word haughty, that she saw the tree, the snake said to her, eat it, and interpreting that she became haughty, she wanted to be like God. That's a stretch. That's a stretch.
You're talking about in terms of Chava.
Chava, and then and Elisheva sort of experiencing some haughtiness. It just makes me want to think, why did the Shla? What was his problem with women? Because this is. To me, is just, as I say, it's a stretch from listening to the snake, taking the apple, Adam then saying she did it, and Eve saying he did it, et cetera, et cetera. But where does he...
What apple?
Well, I think, I mean, look, if we go step by step, it's hard to find the chink in exactly with the Shla, where you would disagree. So it's there's nothing to disagree about that Chava is responsible here. The only question is, why did she do it? Now, obviously, the simple read would be she did it because the fruit looked good. It looked delicious, so she ate from it. But the Shlod's going one level deeper. He's saying, well, I mean, not exactly. After all, the snake does egg her on. The snake could have said, you should eat that fruit because it looks delicious, but it doesn't say that. The snake doesn't say it looks delicious. It sounds like the snake is saying the reason you want to eat this fruit is because you want to be like Adam, which, by the way, the snake is not lying about. Because later on, Hashem says we have to kick them out of Gan Eden because now they're like us, which is a whole different shear that we're not giving right now. But so the Shla saying that the reason Chava ate from the fruit is because she wanted to be like God is not a stretch at all. To call that haughtiness, okay, I mean, I don't know if that's the word that you would use off the bat, but I understand where he's coming from when he says that. To now ascribe that to Elisheva, so I'll tell you what I think. Where I think we can kind of relate to what the Shla is talking about. Okay? Anybody who's celebrated a bar mitzvah, I guess before COVID, right? Although actually, I guess now with COVID, it's even harder. You know that when you go to the shul and you say, okay, I want the following people to get aliyot, the gabbai sometimes have to do a little bit dancing around to try to figure out how to give all the people that you want to give aliyot all their aliyot. Why? Because you have to do it in the right sequence, right? Because you can't give it to a father and then a son or a son and a father. So you got to start mixing and matching between the two families, right? Why do we do that?
Ayin Hara.
Ayin Hara, right? Now, what's the idea over there? What's the idea with Ayin Hara over there?
I was thinking the same thing. There's too much simcha going on over here. You've got so many family members on the bima, so people in the house say, wow, what a wonderful family. Look at the grandfather, with the son, with the grandson.
That's it.
Chas
v'shalom. That's it. That's it. That, to a certain degree, that's almost undoubtedly what's going on over here. And in a sense, and I want to be careful here because I was surprised to see this, but I wasn't really surprised. In a sense, there is a little bit of a shemet, almost, I don't want to say of blaming Elishava, but of at least saying, Elishava, you should have known something of this was going to happen. You know, there's all this simcha, you're getting all proud and all these points connected. People are going to get jealous. And when people get jealous, this is what happens. That's the point of saying Bli Ayin Hara. That's the point of not having a father and a son and a son and a father, one after the other, to avoid the making other people feel resentful that all this great stuff is happening, right? And perhaps Elisheva could have done with a dose of humility, or if not humility, at least sensitivity towards others, and maybe finding a way to downplay all this happiness. It's understandable that she wouldn't be able to. It's totally reasonable. But it could be that that's one of the messages that we're meant to take away, that when you come into a windfall of luck and success and happiness, be very careful that you don't let it ultimately lead to resentment upon the others and then maybe to tragedy. Because that's something that frighteningly could happen.
Yeah. True.
Why don't we end with the Zohar? Just one nice little ditty, nice little cherry on top at the end. So the Zohar says that it connects two people with similar names, Elisheva and Batsheva.
Hmm.
Why? So it says, Re'uya aita Batsheva shiha malchut leDavid miyom shenivra haolam. Batsheva was always meant for David, and Re'uya aita Elisheva shiha malchut. And Elisheva was always meant for Aaron, excuse me. In the Shar Gilgulim, I didn't look it up inside, I just saw it quoted. It says that Elisheva, that Batsheva actually was actually a reincarnation of Elisheva, and they're the same. And so one of them was married to Aaron, the other one was married to David. And the Zohar says, Avasham hu ledin, kan hu lerachamim. Over there by David, it's ledin, because David was a warrior, right? He was involved with war and everything like that. But over here, it's l'rachamim, because Aaron is a man of peace, a man of rachamim, a man of shalom, and chesed. And he even says, kihi otiyot Elisheva ve'el hu chesed. I'm not exactly sure totally what the reference is over here. But the idea being that Elisheva has another side to her coin that comes out later. But the Elisheva bat Aminadav that we know over here is her side of chesed. And later on would come out the side of din, when she kind of marries David HaMelech. Okay, so we saw tonight, I think, with three major teachings about Elisheva bat Aminadav. Number one, the fact that she had a lot of yichus, which is something that Aaron was focused on when he married her, because it's important to look into the yichus of the person that you're going to marry, as a teaching. Number two, that the first time we meet her is actually when she was one of the Mialdot, Evriot. She was Pua, I guess, to Yocheved Shifra. But then, by and large, the most famous role that Elisheva bat Aminadav plays is the role of a grieving mother. And I think it's just really a poignant idea that you could have all this happiness on one day, and then just it gets washed away, and you have to hold on to it. I think I actually quoted this in my YouTube Dvar Torah this week. I said, I forgot the exact quote, but it was about how usually you want to wait for the dust to settle in your life until you realize that the dust is your life. And if you have a little bit of happiness, you have to grab it, because that's it's cool. Here and then it's gone. Yeah. Wish everybody a Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you very much.